know them. These are the only two submissions that we will be dealing with. We were supposed to deal with the improvised detention management. It would be illegal for the committee to deal with a report that has not been submitted. We would, however, want to drop to speak to this because the intern obligation, obviously, in terms of receiving annual reports to this committee, what all of us are supposed to do in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So we'll start off with the withdrawal, just giving us a quick synopsis of the oversight on the two entities and say something about information. And then we'll deal with the Water Research Commission and CCPA thereafter. We'll take questions on the Water Research Commission first and then CCPA. Water Research did tell us that they will not get to stay until the end, so we are allowed to leave. You would remember, honourable members, we said that we will deal with the remainder of the response from DWAF on the very good hearing we had on the National Water Act. I thank the CEO of the Water Research Commission. We had a good submission from your organization also. I think that would help us to move forward with regards to the National Water Act. But that is all from my side. At the same time, I say that this is the last annual report that we will be receiving from both of you in this parliament, the third parliament. Anything else that we say and do and promise each other here today, you will have to give that to the new committee after the election next time. But I'm sure that I should take the opportunity, which I want to do at the end of people who are leaving. Let me express my profound appreciation for our very interactive relationship that we've had this last almost 5 years, and we trust that our engagement that we've had with both of you, that moving forward it can benefit only the water and forestry sector, and of course the people of South Africa as a whole, and of course we trust that that has been assisting us to implement our mandate that we have received from the electorate in so far as water and forestry is concerned. Because that's why we are here. But yes, it's not a sad moment, it's a good moment, because it's the end of the 5 years, and the democracy means election today, and there will be another session like this. We can only wish those that will be dealing with water and forestry again well with you. And what? It's over to you now.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson, committee members, and of course we are not alone here. We come along with the institutions that we play oversight on, that is the TCTA and the Water Research Commission. And as you requested, Chairperson, with regard to Nkomati, the reason why the act is not being tabled right now is they didn't actually follow all due processes, which they've actually done now. They have submitted now properly to the minister, and I'm sure a letter will be coming to the Speaker of Parliament in due course on the annual report of Nkomati Catchment Management Agency. Without further ado, Chair, let me move straight on to the assessment that we've done, basically for the TCTA, the role that the minister and the department have to play with regard to overseeing the annual report. We've actually done the assessment in order to gauge the performance of the organization in relation to what they've actually indicated in the shareholder compact. And in our evaluation, we have actually made some comments, which we sent back to TCA, and they responded accordingly. And we are quite happy with the response that they actually gave us. So in the process, once we've received those comments, the minister then actually signed a letter of consent to Parliament requesting that the annual report be tabled in Parliament in due course. With regard to the financial situation of the TCTA, that's in the next slide. We can see that the TCTA is actually a healthy growing business. There is a growth in terms of revenue. There is, of course, the deficit has also grown up due to the fact that the business is growing up. And the plant property has also grown up a little bit. And in overall, Chair, we are quite happy with the way in which business is being performed within the TCTA. In the next slide, in much more greater detail, we are quite happy that they've gotten an qualified audit, which means that indeed they've complied with all the requirements of the PFMA and all government-related legislation. Of course, there is a net deficit, which reflects shortfall in interest cover, which is always going to happen due to changes in the financial market. And of course, their projected cash flow suggests that business is viable and can continue as a going concern. Obviously, there are projects that the TCTA is actually running on behalf of the department. The Super Highland Water Project, mostly the operation and maintenance, the Blackwater Project, which has been completed, and obviously it will come in quite handy to provide water in the Western Cape for Cape Town in particular. The Bresta, which is basically an augmentation of water to supply the Sasson in Gauteng, is also completed. And of course, we are quite happy that there will be new work that will be expected of the TCTA. And of course, that is done on a ring-fenced basis. Just to give you an example, Chair, the work dam, as well as the new dam that will be coming up in KZN, will all be commissioned, obviously, under the auspices of the TCTA. In short, Chair and members, this is the review that we've done for the TCTA. And with your permission, Chair, if you don't mind, can I move on to the Water Access Commission? Thank you very much. We have also done the same with the Water Access Commission, meaning that we go through their annual report, we evaluate it, and we see whether it really complies with all the fundamentals of government legislation, particularly compliance to the TFMA, as well as any other government legislation. So we've looked at all of those. We've also provided very comprehensive comments and, of course, questions that we put forward to the Water Access Commission, and the Minister is quite happy with what it contains, ultimately, in the annual report, for which she has actually sent a letter once again to the chairperson of the, or to the Speaker of Parliament, confirming her satisfactory approval of the annual report. Of course, there are continuous meetings that we will have with the Water Access Commission Chair, in the sense that the business of the Water Access Commission is a very complicated business, so we always have to keep on engaging with them just to make sure that indeed we understand what is going on with regard to the work that they have to do. Concerning their financial statements, I just need to indicate to members here that obviously the Water Research Commission is an institution whose revenue is actually, let me say, very limited in the sense that it's actually based on a certain percentage of the water resources charges that are actually made in some of the institutions. But we are quite happy with quite a number of issues around the financial statements of the Water Research Commission, their revenue, which has actually grown up, the operating expenditure shows an increase. To say less surplus, basically, I think it will amplify more on what that entails. And in actual fact, with almost everything that the TCTA has done with regard to PPE, non-current assets, the current assets, the capital and reserves, the long liabilities and the current liabilities, there has been an increase in all of those. Obviously, that's a good sign that indeed the institution is actually taking more with regard to the responsibilities that are bestowed upon them. next slide, please. There are financial statements. They specially received and are qualified for it, which is actually very good, meaning that they actually complied with all applicable legislation and the PMA in particular. Their income, which I said earlier on, is mainly generated from the water sewage levy, is sitting at 85%, and we still do believe that that amount can actually increase as and when we increase our own revenue collection from the various water users in the country. With regard to funds, the funds have successfully been obtained from local and international sources. That is the additional funding of 13.3 million. And lastly, the funding with regard to supporting the student intake is actually on the increase as well, which we are actually quite happy with. In the last slide, Chair, we have actually looked at where the major funding of the Water Research Commission goes into, of which almost 34% goes into water resource management, really taking into account and making sure that the knowledge, expertise in water resource management is actually increased. The next part goes into water-linked ecosystems, basically to take care of the ecosystem. And the third aspect is that the funds go to water use and waste management, really lending a hand in making sure that water use is actually done effectively in a country where, indeed, the use of water has actually been a problem, is actually a problem. And, of course, the most interesting aspect is the water utilization in agriculture, wherein, obviously, they look at how best to utilize the water in that sector, which utilizes almost 60% of all raw water in the country. That is the short synopsis, Chairperson, of the review of the annual report of the two institutions. I want to thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Any quick questions, Edward?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. You will have to raise your hand very high because I can't see you on the speech today.
Almost. just a couple of quick questions. I just wanted to know, just briefly, Chairperson, the additional funding, the 13.3 million, what type of funding is it? Grant funding and so on. So just briefly. And then, secondly, Chairperson, if I may, the students that are supported, the 65%, as well as the other 35%, all right? If they could maybe just briefly give the agenda they break down. Just the last question, this net surplus, could Doc maybe briefly elaborate on it? There's a percentage change. The column that the line that says net surplus is a 44% percentage change. Maybe just a little bit more information on that line.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is only need to find out also a clarification with regards to the work done, because I've heard that the PCTA is going to be involved in that project. So I just wanted to know when are they going to start with that project. Thank you very much.
Can we hold that question for PCTA themselves in this week?
I just want to follow up on this one of the students. Just want to find out where are they utilized after completing their studies.
Anyone else? Maybe what can explain to us the grants that we have with them when they bring their own annual report to us? One of the things that we have consistently said to the department is a reflection in your own annual report on the entities, other than telling us who they are and what they do and so on. But insofar as your own oversight is concerned, what is the difficulty that Ross can't get that one, has not been able to get that right for the last almost 5 years? It hinders us as a committee to have an overall focus on how you have been doing your own oversight. But also maybe assist us in saying to us, you've got, let me take the Water Research Commission, you've got the Water Research Commission, your one and only entity in the water sector doing research, reporting to DWARC. The others don't report to DWARC. The CSIR don't report to DWARC. There are a couple of others. The universities don't report to DWARC. I think we'd be interested to see how DWARC has been able to use this vehicle called the Water Research Commission to address very many fundamental water issues in the country. So, for example, I know they've got a volume of research stuff that they do. We are always asking you, how do you use the research that they give to address, of course, quite a number of challenges, but also the positives that we have in the water sector. And the same would be for the TCTA. How has the TCTA been able to assist what with its mandate also that it has? And that is to make sure that the targets are being met, and the list goes on and on. We insisted the DDG, when you talk to us on your oversight, we'd like to hear the politics of it, if you like. The politics of the oversight that you have done on the department, on the two entities, and not necessarily the rands and cents of what they have produced you, because we're interested in the bigger picture. Are these two entities important for you, and are they useful to you? Because if they are not important to you, and if they are not useful to you, what is it that you think make them important and useful also? So if you could assist us with the questions that all the members have asked.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think you are actually very correct to say maybe in the next year, when we look at the performance of this entity, basically we need to address the issues that we have actually amply covered. We do acknowledge that for now we're actually confined it to the things that we have to play oversight on. But we also acknowledge that indeed, in future, we need to come in and say to you, have these entities actually helped us in terms of attaining our own objectives? And we are certainly going to do that, Chair. Let me start off with a question from Honorable Arendse. And I think you are correct to say, I'll leave it to the Water Research Commission actually to talk around where the 13.3 million actually came from, and what they've actually done with regard to the issues of surpluses and all of that, but also address the, particularly the question that you asked with regard to what we have in the annual report. And once again, I do acknowledge, and we do acknowledge as a department, that indeed what we ought to be doing in the annual report when we report on our own performance as well, instead of just listing the entities, we need to indicate whether indeed they actually enabled us to attain our own objectives. And we want to make an undertaking, Chair, to the portfolio committee that indeed next year we'll make sure that we address issues according to the way in which you have actually requested us to do.
If you don't, can we recommend to the minister to withhold your bonus?
So I think most of what I'm saying here, Chair, is basically in the future to say we will take into account the issues that you've actually raised up here. In the annual report for next year, we'll actually certainly take into account the issues that you raised and make sure that we address the objectives with regard to how these institutions actually assist us in attaining the broader objectives of government. And yeah, we'll certainly do it like that in the next annual report and in the next year. Okay. And of course, the issue of the borders, maybe we'll also talk about it later on. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, Honorable
Arnold. Just on the question on whether on what the entities are assisting us with. I find it rather peculiar that Cyrus has to say we'll come back next year. You know, if you look, just by inspection at what they actually are doing, you took quite a clear view as to exactly what it is that they're doing. For instance, TCTA, you know, they're quite instrumental in assisting us with producing barbed water, you know, by building the, you know. I find it strange that you can't give a kind of an overview, you know. I mean, you haven't really said anything as to what they do. And yet, for me, you know, there are not in the department that are depending on side versus going to the dams that TCTA, Berg River, and others, and things like that. I can see what it is that they're doing, you know. The Water Research Commission, you know. I can see what it is that they're doing, you know. I asked a question last year about the what is it, NIST, I don't think you can remember, the catching of fog or something.
Yeah, yeah? The NIST, yeah.
So, you know, I am aware of those kind of things that they're doing, you know. So I was really expecting to hear, but I'm going to take your time. It's just a brief overview of the department we're able to actually able to give without us waiting on a report for next year.
EDG?
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable member, colleague from the Water Research Commission. In response to the question raised by the Chair and group members of this committee, let me say, without these two organizations before yourselves today, maybe the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry would not be performing to this level. With the Water Research Commission, for instance, every piece of knowledge that we use in planning, we share with them. Sometimes they generate it for us, and we use that knowledge to develop plans in order for South Africa to have water. Particularly the wastewater treatment aspect of our resources. The Water Research Commission is very active without saying other key strategic areas of the commission are not important, but that one, because we are faced with a problem now, and the Water Research Commission is very active, and they are playing their advisory role to the minister and to the department as well. With the TCTA, Honorable Adams has just said it. We do plan once we have information, and the TCTA will jointly with us advise on those plans, and they take another step further to ensure that we have infrastructure so that South Africans have water, safe water. I don't know how to quantify it, but as you said, maybe in reporting next year and years to come, we should have a session whereby we can talk the politics, not necessarily the activities that Silas engaged in, but the politics as to how we feel about these organizations, including the water board. I think in this, before this committee, I've indicated that we would do anything to protect the water boards that are performing, because we believe they have a room in this country of ours. So it is all those things that we would like to report to the committee, given time and opportunity to do it.
Why don't we do the following? Let us suggest that what you do is provide the committee with what you have to say. And that you forward that to the committee secretary, detailing to us the kind of things that you have stated in your view, so that in our record we can say that at least Dwarf has been able to give us a better synopsis of their oversight and the impact of their oversight on and of the entity, and also how Dwarf has been able to advance the objectives of these entities in pursuit of Dwarf's own mandate of what they are supposed to be doing. So let us, I questions on that, but ask the department to resubmit to us a more detailed one on that aspect. If we are agreed to this honourable member, thank you, then Dr. Kaffer will hand over to you.
Thank you. Is it okay if I would stand there and move my slides? It would take less time than saying all the time next slide. Is it okay?
If you want to.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I know you're very fast.
Yeah.
So I thought in the presentation to keep the time. So I'm trying to say, when we do this, because it's in my community, okay. Can you all see well? Can you all hear me? Okay. I'm giving you end house. First of all, good morning. It's a great honor for me to be here. Thank you for inviting us. I know it was a short notice, but thank you for being here. So I thank the honorable chair and the of the portfolio committee and the members and the black representative DDG, and we have a new chair, so if I can introduce you to our chairperson, Professor Janine Adams from the University of Nelson Mandela, and she's the first time that she has been to Parliament, so it's a great, you know, experience for her.
Very welcome.
Thank you. Okay. I want to speak today about really how the WRC, and it ties to the question that we asked before, is attempting to make a difference. And very, very closely show as the annual report of what we and what we have done in the last year is linked to the department's objective and overall strengthening the country's ability to address water issues for point of providing the appropriate knowledge. Not only providing the appropriate knowledge, but packaging it and delivering it and sharing and transferring it in the right way. So the theme of the annual report, which relates very much to the activities that we have undertaken, is actually the emphasis on knowledge for growth and development, and we have been spending many, many hours with the Department of Water Affairs talking about the strategies that the department is putting together for growth and development. So it will show you how important knowledge is for it. Now, I just wanted to give you an overall idea of what is the WRC all about and where is, you know, our activities. The role is to create knowledge, but the country will not be able to manage water if we don't actually manage three key things: quantity, accessibility, and quality. I remember being in Parliament a few years ago, and there were people, there were farmers, and they said, we have to have water, how we get them to the field. So accessibility is key. And I always say people don't wash their hands if they have to go to I don't know, about a kilometer or two to the pump to collect water. So we should not really ignore accessibility. So this holy triangle is very important. But what's very important is constantly to understand what knowledge do you need to know in order to utilize the resource but also protect it. Because when you do use the resource, you also pollute often. And you need to actually understand it end in end. So basically, the relationship between land use and water use and resource sustainability is huge, and we need to do it at the catchment level. So the WRC do research throughout all this, throughout that picture. Now, what we address mainly is three key issues. Water scarcity, we are living in the semi-arid zones of water, and water scarcity is a key issue for South Africa, so we need to do a lot of research understanding what is the climate change issue that actually reflects on water scarcity. So we've done many, many years of hydroclimate change. We've gone into climate change, and we're now moving into adaptation related to climate change, which relates to the scarce resource. We also have to understand water productivity, because if we don't have enough water, we should use water wisely. So the whole notion of water conservation requires very, very strong element of reserve. And the whole field of water utilization in agriculture is all about more crop per drop. So how do you utilize water more efficiently? Not to speak about water losses, which is a major, you know, cause of actually losing water and gas productive. And water poverty. We do have poor people that do not have water. And there is a very strong link between not having water services
water and sanitation appropriate and reduction in GDP or the other way around. So with research and development, we create knowledge. We support policy. It provides the technology and hopefully provides impact from point of the economic, the social, health and environment of the country to create growth and development. So that's the backbone of what we are doing. And when we talk scarcity, and I put it in because a lot of our research looks into it, and a lot of what we have done last year looks into it, we look at both physical infrastructure and institutional element of water scarcity. And the people around the country talk about water crisis, I always say, if we have the knowledge to deal with all three together, we do not have a water crisis, nor we would have a water crisis. So the role of knowledge and what we have done in the year under review was try and provide knowledge for effective governance, policy, strategy, and practices, supporting them, assessing them, and providing the competency skill. If the country doesn't have the capacity to actually absorb the knowledge we create and utilize it, we will not go nowhere. And we're also looking at knowledge as a source for improved technologies and practices and do situation analysis when you require constantly to monitor and analyze. So I've already said, and I'm not going to get into it again, is that quantity, quality, and accessibility, but especially quantity and quality from point of South Africa, very important to our sustainability. We have done many years of research, and I think we wouldn't be here today without the good knowledge base that the research has provided in the water field to our country. And I think, you know, sitting where we are today, it's not only good to say we have the knowledge base, we need to invest a lot in furthering that knowledge base because the environment is very dynamic. And there are both climatic and political issues that need to be addressed constantly, and we are living in a country where competency and capacity getting shorter and shorter from day to day, we need to invest in them. Now, that's the mandate of the WRC, and I'm not going to read it all, but I want to emphasize the bottom two. We put a lot of energy in the last year to promote effective transfer of information and technology, and we try to enhance the knowledge and capacity building in the water sector. I cannot say it's easy. I cannot say we're always winning, but we're trying very, very hard to work with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, with the Professional Association, WISA, and many other bodies, and of course we work with all universities and all other organizations, but we try very, very hard to build and support these activities. This is our vision and mission. Again, it's in the annual report, and I think it hasn't changed, so there is not much to say, you know, but the mission is very much saying that the WRC, and we act accordingly, we are very true to our mission. The WRC is about being a dynamic hub. When we mean dynamic hub for water center knowledge, we mean that it's minds that meet. It means sharing. It means that people are actually sitting together and people are working together, be it the farmer community, be it, you know, people who do not have sanitation, to government officials. This is where the project actually happening and where the transfer of knowledge is happening. And there is constantly people coming in and out the building, and we are moving throughout the country all the time. And we don't really see us as anything but a catalyst. We basically make the knowledge happen, but we are not the one that actually are the creator of knowledge. In the annual report, we address basically in the executive report, the mandate, the governance issue, how we comply and what we have to do. We have actually looked at our achievements. We have very clear key performance indicators that are, you know, by our board going in, you know, into approval to the minister, and we have actually progressed very well, you know, in according to those key performance area and the financial report, financial statements, and the report of the auditor general. From point of our achievement, the key achievement is that we have to invest, and we have invested, you know, according to the feedback, in the right new knowledge. We have been contributing to building capacity, and you have heard from Draft that we have, you know, increased the number of students, and I will report a bit more about that. We have tried very hard to improve the way we share water center knowledge and enhance the dissemination of knowledge and its understanding in the water sector, and provide a way to actually get new innovations applicable. We have four key strategic areas. The areas have two major areas that look at water as the resource, look at its management, look at its protection. And that will be the water resource management one that provides a lot of support to policy. And they will look at assessment and development of the resource. It looks at impact, or climatic change, you know, any impact on the water resources protection and all the policy and institutional arrangements. At the same time, the ecosystem is a living entity and we look into it too. And we then look at water use and water utilization in agriculture. And basically, it's a very unique one. So we separated agriculture from water use and waste management, which includes the domestic, both urban and rural, and we're looking at the elements of mining and industrial in the water use and waste management, but we separate the water utilization for agriculture because we feel that agriculture, first of all, is a major user, but it uses water differently to other users. Now, when we talk about water use and waste management, there is a huge issue of water services. There is a lag in the country. We are talking about people without water and sanitation. Mainly sanitation is an issue. And local governments often have capacity problems. So we have put a lot of effort into it. We also look from point of technology, how we can provide water supply and treatment technology that will fit the rural area, that will fit the semi-urban, the informal area, in a way that it will be both economical, but at the same time, affordable from point of health, and actually will be proper. And we look at wastewater and effluent treatment and reuse technology. I'm very proud. We went to visit Anglo-Pol, and I have seen Anglo-Pol producing water from decanting water in the mine to a very good quality, and on all started from WRC investment. So it's very rewarding to know that, you know, you do get this kind of technology to work from time to time. And of course, plantation health and hygiene is a major issue. Water utilization in agriculture ties directly to water poverty. We're looking at small-scale farmer, emerging farmer. We're looking at food and fiber production. And it's a very unique area because the farmers are actually taking part in the research. This is where we do most of our action research, and I'll talk a little bit more about it. And we look at fuel and timber production related to forestry, poverty reduction, I mentioned, not only reduction, but wealth creation and resource protection because agriculture is also a major polluter. So one has to look at it. Now, just a little bit of statistics, just for interest. I'm not going to talk about this because Mr. Betsy gave you the ratio. And what we can see in here that they don't differ much from last year, and that we achieve what we have actually said we set to achieve from point of percentages. Now, the other ratios, the other numbers that you got is our number of projects. And it may seem alarming that we've gone down, but we're actually happy about it. We did it strategically. We are trying to do bigger, larger projects. So instead of actually giving, like, little projects to everybody, we are building bigger programs of projects. It doesn't mean that less people get the money because we make them work together. There are consortia of, you know, previously disadvantaged university with an established university, consultants with universities, CSIR with, you know, with universities. Increase the number of students. It allows students to study even when they are not, you know, working at the university itself, and it provides more and more water becomes a multidisciplinary issue. You can't actually look at water and say it's only, you know, engineering or it's only microbiology. You need to actually look holistically, and more social sciences and economics and management come part and parcel of the research. You need larger projects. So basically, we have done another drive. We try to finalize all projects so the knowledge can get out. So we ended up with less projects. We have a bit less active projects, but we have much more what we call solicited projects. Now, the WRC funds through two streams of funding, actually three of them, but the major two, one is what we call non-solicited and solicited. The non-solicited allow innovation from the universities, the academics, the researcher. The solicited say, the country has a problem. Please look at the problem. So farming because we said we don't give money. A few years ago, we didn't have a single sanitation person professor in the country. Now we have a few because we said we're giving money for sanitation. We want you to do research on sanitation, and we build it in university. So that's how we actually try and move the research into certain areas that the country require research on. What we try to keep up is the research ratio. You see, we are a funding organization, so the money must go out. You know, we try to put as little money as possible to be kept and properly function, but most of the money should go outside, and we use the 75% ratio well. But what you see in here is that these are the years, and this is the trend, and we are very much aware of it. We're putting more and more money onto knowledge dissemination. So some of the money that went per se only for creation of new knowledge is now going into packaging of knowledge and dissemination activities like workshops, meeting, debates that we haven't done before, producing briefs, producing different kinds of ways, DVDs, that we are actually need to do because we found out that the previous way of knowledge dissemination weren't very effective as we wish them to be. From point of levy as a percentage, we did, and we are very grateful because that was very supportive last year from point of collection. And we had an improvement in the level of levies. At the same time, we also increased our other sources of income. When we talk other sources of income, the Department of Agriculture provides funding for specific projects on water utilization in agriculture. And so we get from international the World Health Organization provides some money into HIV and AIDS, you know. And that's how actually the European Commission has given us money to do scenarios on water. What I mean us, it's not us. The money comes through us. But we are also doing two things, and we'll talk about it in capacity. We are, and that's where we directly help the department, we are actually functioning in cases as implementing agents from the department for capacity building and knowledge sharing, and we'll talk a bit more about it. We talked about the students already, and where are the students? Well, some of them were very glad we can say we meet them at university, you know. So if you look at Professor Adams, who are currently our chair, I would say she's a product of the WRC. The same I can say about myself, and this way I think we can say, So a number of us are very much find our way in the water sector. There is some mismatch. Sometimes I can see students looking for work, and at the same time, you know, the people are looking for work. There is a problem because people want experienced people. We are very, very happy, and we are in good contact with the Learning Academy of Bluff, you know, trying to put, you know, together, you know, somehow a throughput into the department, not doing it that well. University often don't have a clue where the students are after they finish. So we are developing now a whole system of tracking those students, you know, to find out where they are. And we're also trying to use Visa as a matchmaking institution because the Water Institute of South Africa has an opening to the professionals. We have been involved in a number of awards and very much supporting the All Young Scientists Research Award. We just have given 3 awards together with Visa and the CSR to 3 very promising scientists, gave very excellent lectures on various research issues. We do joint venture, and one of them, we are a draft implementing agent for PET Water. PET Water is a very interesting network of networks which actually teach water resource management and provide training courses. And the money comes through UNESCO from the Belgium government to the WRC, and the WRC basically gets the thing going. So I think many universities, many other organizations are involved, and it's growing from strength to strength. This is phase 2 of this. And then we are also involved in WIN. WIN is very important initiative as part of Massiva Bane, as part of the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. It looks at local government, and I think WIN has done really wonder in sharing lessons, in actually teaching one municipality what the others is doing, with understanding how to disseminate knowledge to councillors. And I think if any of you are not aware of it, and want material, please let me know, because I think the outcomes that comes out of green are fantastic. And we hope that, again, it's growing. It's trying to actually move into supporting the other countries, which is very nice. And I think, you know, we see, you know, that it is really made an impact in the country. And funny enough, we also involved in education for kids. And in, on top of the career that we produce the whole series of learning from school learners, grade, you know, out there. And through the De Bono, you know, the Institute for Science, we actually launched it and trying to get it to school. We also support capacity building in Africa as part of, you know, the overall NEPAD initiative. And we're hoping that by next year we will have Center of Excellence for Water Research in Africa. We have actually, we'll try to build it in Southern Africa and in the West Africa first. But we identified them, and NEPAD is now trying to actually move ahead to AMCO. AMCO and AMCO start talking to each other, and hopefully we'll get some results. And we continue to establish other activities like resource centers, the streams of knowledge, the inter-academy program, which is more science-related, and we just signed a bilateral agreement with Kenya. You know, as part of the Department of Science and Technology bilateral BS Science and Water Research Agreement. Knowledge dissemination is huge. We put a lot of energy and funds into it. We envision publishing the report, which is the normal, you know, run of the mill. We have also conducted more and more action research. Action research means that the user, the end user, are part of the research, be it the farming community, or be it actually the people that have to do the decision thereafter, or people who should use the technology thereafter. We have given you last year the book, Our Water, Our Culture, and we have done a number of open days, one specifically for DWAF, and we published the water and the water wheel. The sludge guideline is another important element, because the sludge guideline, again, is a project with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, have actually showed the country how to use sludge. And we have done an impact study on it and shown that, you know, by properly utilizing sludge, you can actually economically grow. And we organize a number of conferences from IWRM to wastewater, being very strongly involved with Africa Sun and a number of other international conferences, exhibit and at the same time presented in conferences. From point of application, we try to transfer innovation. When we have to, we patent the knowledge, because we have seen in the past that we are very good in water innovation in the country, and then the whole world is using it. So where we have to protect South African invention, we will do. However, we are not about money. We are about application. So it's not about earning money. I'm very proud to say that Airbus have licensed 1 hour patent in which you actually neutralize mine water. It's going into large scale now. If people don't imagine that from small scale to large scale takes years to actually expand it. But it's actually a very good technology, very unique technology, and we hope that everyone will take it, not only in the country, but also overseas. And the other one that I'm very proud of is the ceramic ultrafiltration. I call it the cell phone or the mobile phone for water, which is a small ceramic ultrafiltration, very advanced technology, creating a very small system. And Ikasasa, which is a company down in the Western Cape, have licensed it, and they are going from strength to strength. Actually, we are getting royalty for them, which means that they are doing business now, and we aim to actually take it to Africa. Thank you very much. I will not talk that much about finance, because Mr. Betsy already said a few things about it, and I don't have much more to say. The financial statements are done in according to IFRS, this new system that has actually have been implemented throughout, and this is the International Financial Reporting Standard. And overall, we had a clean report, and the variance between our actual budget income and expenditure was within the target of 10%. So we basically, the expenditure and the income, what was budgeted and what we actually have done are well. Now, you have to understand that we do budgeting on a cash basis. We do financial reporting on an accrual basis. Those are two different systems that actually create very kind of strange paper entries. Now, overall we say that we are in a stronger position compared to 2006 or 2007, can see that we have a growth in investment. We had actually, unfortunately, things have fallen, but we had a very buoyant equity market, and we have an investment, you know, that had put aside many years ago that had been approved by Treasury. So that investment has actually been growing. The trade receivables were lower due to levy payments received before year end, and the increase in cash and cash equivalents was also substantial, and cash held at year end is in respect to commitment, and the travel payable of $10 million is due to accrual. Now, we do have a net surplus, but we don't really have a surplus. It's because this money is committed for projects for the next year and the year after. So what happened actually is that we run into multi-year contracts. The contracts are not 1 year. The nature of research is that the system doesn't allow you to do the research within the year they said they will do the research. It's not like a consultancy and you sit next to a table, you know, there's all kind of climatic and other problems. So they asked to actually move the deliverable. So we roll the money. So basically, it is a commitment towards the project, but from year to year, certain amount of funds are rolled. On top of it, because the budget is cash-based, and because the system is accrual, it creates that also. So we can actually sit and explain it in detail, but it creates actually paper entries. There will be no surplus and no investment out of that surplus. Cash flow is also a very interesting situation because sometimes invoices come late and we don't invoice us, but the invoice belongs to the year before. And then cash-wise, you have to pay them. Payments of levy comes at the end of the year, so money actually has to be paid in April. So we may be cash-rich at the end of March, and by the end of April, all that money is gone. So it's a very interesting dynamic that ties to the multi-year projects. If it would only be our expenses, our life would be much easier. And we have been told, because we tried very hard to keep them to the deliverable, to the time, the research community says that we can forget about research in the country. And we need to be very sensitive to that, you know. We also talk about increase in revenue, mainly due to the levy, which we are very grateful to. It's the main source of income, as was said. And we are very proud of the leverage. A few years ago, we didn't have a cent of leverage, so that's actually well done for us. The building is a company. The WRC have bought the building as a company. It simply saved a few millions already a few years ago. So we never actually made it once and for all. So we have a subsidiary, which is the building. We live in that building. Very little part of the building is used by others, not the WRC. We try to make the building a water hub, so we try to rent it to water people. Not very successful all the time. We even have an undertaker as a shop, but that's the bottom part, you know, but it brings income. But basically, the building had gone through a major alteration a few years ago. It was not safe, it was not clean, it was not really a proper hub, and that cost. So until today, the building is servicing the loan, and we are paying the building a reasonable rate. So it becomes quite an interesting financial exercise, but this is what is F706. Okay. Lastly, what I wanted to say, all we do is try to make a difference and an impact in the country. Now, what I've given you in the notes is another 15 slides with examples, but I'm not going to talk to you about them, showing you how research has made a difference. And we invested in research studies looking at it. We used independent bodies to do that, seeing how our research made an impact on societal issues, on economical issues, health and environmental issues. And those are the four studies, and I will be very happy to come and talk to you about it or to the new portfolio committee, and some of you will be there. We have looked at in-field rainwater harvesting, and it's a very unique technique. But you can see the size of the spinaches that are growing. The difference in the size of the meal is very effective technique, and it's really working. We looked at the river health program, and I think you're all familiar with Adopt a River. Do you know that? Yeah, but river health program was a research project many years ago. Today, it is actually Adopt a River, relate to it, but also all provincial government and industry are using it. So it's quite interesting how research can actually make a difference. Membrane research, again, a lot of technology. you know, that come about. A lot of companies are using it, and the ultra filtration, the ceramic one that I'm talking about, the mobile phone for cleaning water is one of them, and the wastewater study is again another study. And all of them are independent studies properly done in order to show, and we hope to publish all of them. What we learned is that the way water about knowledge can enhance and be a catalyst is not a question that it cannot, it can. The impact is normally not one impact, it's multifaceted, but we need to understand the impact value chain. If we don't understand the beginning of the research, who will do it, and how they will do it, and what they need, then we might as well not do the research. And that we need partnerships, we need capacity and competency based in order to actually mobilize the research, have to do action research, we need ownership. Often there are small wins, and people do not understand the time. From research to application, often the lag is quite large, and therefore when we do research, we don't do research for today, we often do research for the medium and the long term, and we have to anticipate the needs, and often those are not explicit needs. So I thank you. Maybe I should go back to my place. Thank you for the water.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kaffer. Honorable members, it's over to you to ask the questions. I think a very good report that was presented here to the committee. And
I'll wait for the questions.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very much interested regarding the students and also the capacity that you just initiated that are actually helping capacity building. So I just wanted to know exactly the capacity that they're talking about, is it only for those 664 students that they mentioned, or are they also capacitating municipalities where actually what has been delivered? Because that, at that level, really there is a problem. If that is the case, how many municipalities are actually capacitating? And with regard to these students, I also want to know how many from the 664, how many have how many are employed in the Department of Water Affairs from this disadvantaged communities, where have you drawn this field? Because as we've been moving around from different constituencies, we've been still having greatly with regard to the rural areas where actually in fact so far the development is very minimal, and the infrastructure is only based in towns, no real infrastructure in the rural areas, and in last month in Katamba also we had those problems regarding the quality of water where children died. So I just wanted to know what actually you done with regards to that. So if you can really start finding the thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think if you could assist us with the following. I'm really interested to know whether the Water Resources Commission has been able to gauge in South Africa as a whole whether we have been able to. Are you satisfied that in the country knowledge dissemination has been able to reach very many different levels in our society? Why do we have, for example, let me start with the worst case scenario, that the media simply just don't get it right on water issues. apart from the fact that they continue to sensationalize, but when they have to speak to the factual issues of the water issues, in most instances, we see articles that mislead rather than educate. Do you forge a relationship with groups like that to allow dissemination of knowledge in that regard? The other level, I would imagine in the world of academia, I've met very many different people, and also through the Water Research Commission, I've engaged with very many different people. At that level, the area that bothers me quite a lot is at the level of our community. Again, there, it's very easy for somebody to put in the tone, water scare, and then our people are scared. And they would be scared because at the level of the community, I think there's a big lack of knowledge dissemination and just knowledge in general around the water issues. Again, does the Water Research Commission, do you engage at that level also? I know that our difficulty has been in the National Water Act, one of the weakest implementation of the National Water Act is the implementation on community involvement. But how do you get involved in knowledge dissemination at that level? If the people that I'm talking about that not necessarily have sufficient knowledge about the things that you said. I mean, the four things that you raised there about membrane and all of that, I think people will be very astonished to know what membrane are you talking about. Is it your brain that's taken out now or what? And I think it's a danger. It's a danger that you have a country that is highly politicized but does not have sufficient knowledge on the water issues. It's a danger because it means that the objective, for example, around the reality of water scarcity, is just never going to permeate. It's never going to get there because people do not have. Have we made mistakes over the years? And are those mistakes around implementation of services more than balancing it out with some of the other needs that are required? I think we would like to know, because it's important for the committee also, where have we gone wrong that we are not sufficiently providing knowledge at that level of the society. So I'd like to know if you could answer that for us. And then I wrote something there about work with last year there were some difficulties. The Auditor General pointed something out in your submission. When you able to overcome?
Yeah.
Because I don't see anything this year with regards to that. On the cash and accrual, I'm worried. Are you putting them in place sufficiently? Because if I can't compare it with what, but what is the closest example that I can use that is the cash and accrual? And the difficulties that arise. Are you satisfied that you have sufficient systems in place that will not bring up the contradiction of cash and accrual? And I use the word contradiction in positive terms, not necessarily in negative. That's from my side.
Can we get up and speak?
No?
Okay. Shall I answer? Okay. Let me start from the beginning. Let's start with capacity building. Capacity building issue is very complex. For the WRC, it's very complex in the sense that the WRC will not exist if there wouldn't be a research community. So you do need to have future researchers in the country. So you need to produce students at academic institution. Hopefully they will get into the institution and in future we will have new researchers. You know, and like when we talk about water allocation reform, we also have to understand the demographic of the students and where the future goes. So we try from early age to influence kids to do science, to understand water as a possible career, and try and support young researchers because we need a future. Overall in the country, there is a problem with researchers. Many of them are getting older, many of them are white males, and the country as a whole is suffering for shortage of scientists. So, you know, as far as what we belong to the family of science councils and the university, we try very hard with Minister Mangane to try and actually talk about capacity building for research. So we have direct investment and interest in having a research community, an active research community. Then there is another problem, which is if there is no capacity in the country to manage water, or there is no capacity to absorb the knowledge that comes from research, then they are not relevant to the country. So we need to see that there is capacity for that. Now, very interestingly, this is a very complex issue because you will ask what's actually happening. Now, we provide the training from point of training material, but we do not do the training. So we provide the organization that do the training with the tool to do the training. We will provide the material to be disseminated to the community about water and sanitation, for example. But we don't actually go from community to community and disseminate, but we provide them the tools to do so. Now, talking about local government and district municipality is a big problem. WIN is a good entity. The Water Information Network of South Africa is a good entity. But I have done, and personally I say I have done, because I ran a study on capacity building for local government in the country that was done through consultants, you know, that did the study for the WRC, and we have actually was part of draft human resource development studies, you know, the 2025. And we say there's a lot of initiative in the country. You know, not having capacity is not from lack of initiative. You know, there are plenty of initiative from DBSA to many other elements that are actually deal with local government. But somehow one hand doesn't talk to the other one. And we said we need a body that will coordinate it. And I still maintain it might probably do us good to have a coordinating body for capacity building in local government. But saying that, you know, we have also now started a center for rural areas for supporting technology treatment advice. So basically we're trying to put centers throughout rural areas, but again, we will build it and we will look into it. It's like the benchmarking initiative. We started it as a research. We moved together with local government and the Department of Water Affairs, and currently the benchmarking initiative, which actually say how good the municipality is from point of water services, became run-of-the-mill that we don't run, we're just a partner. So those are kind of initiatives that we try to put together. But we ourselves, we do not train. We are involved in the provision of training. The Fed Water is all about building training for government. So basically government people and, you know, students go to courses about water resource management to build their competency. So this is another area. Now, the way we are involving community, and we are involving community, and it also ties to your question about user association, we actually take the community in as part of the research. So that's the best way to teach somebody, is they are actually part of being the project. They do the thing. And then they afterwards internalize it as there. So, for example, in-field rainwater harvesting, that's when they have the trenches and the rain falls in, you know, and they basically harvest the rain. The community is being part of this project from the beginning. And now the community is in the three states, the Tabancho area. There are, I think, about, it's in the report, about 72 municipalities actually are together, you know, working together. There is an association related to rainwater harvesting. But we are the catalyst. But take also into account we are very small. And what we can do, we try to actually be very innovative, and it's never enough. We also have a problem from point of policy makers and the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. As the department changed, and it changed a lot in the last few years, there are new faces and new people, some of the competency level has also been to some degree eroded. So we need to understand how we have open days, how we actually talk, how we get involved. I think at any point of time, probably there is about 300 draft people at different levels, you know, assistant director or director level that are sitting on our steering committee. That means they are involved in the project all the time. We send them all the proposals that come for reviewing also. So it is like trying to build the capacity through those activities. But we realize, you know, our report, this is nothing. Some of the report is thicker, way thicker than this. Nobody wants to read them. Nobody has time anymore. So we make a report into 2 pages. So you will have a feel what is the important part of it. And we never did it in the past, but now we have to do what we call briefs, technical briefs. And I'm going to send you the toolkit. I just couldn't carry it, you know, but we try to actually say, that's what the research is about, but not give all the content. And Honorable Chair, I gave you the knowledge review. You know, also, we try to disseminate through that. Okay. So where are the students? You ask where are the students. I truly say that we have done our most to try and trace them. And we now actually have put in dedicated time and people that looks into it. Universities do not know. So we need to really build the system to know ourselves. Part of them are in the water field. Part of them move out of the water field. So we, especially in the geohydrology, the groundwater fields, they are taken like this by the mining company, for example. So we also find out that many of them get taken by other government departments, not water only, science and technology and other fields. Some are sitting at the CSR and they are advancing. I cannot say how many of them are actually, you know, where. We need to research it, and I agree with you, and hopefully by next year we will know better. So I don't know how many of them are employed in draft either. I spoke about the rural area, and I spoke about the farmers. Now, you have asked how we go, or how we say, is the knowledge disseminated to different levels of society, and especially the media? We try to publish at different levels. So the water wheel is, for example, has aimed to public understanding of science. There is one idea of actually getting the water wheel to the CNAs of the world. I think it's quite an interesting article that may be sold even. So that way we can actually get water issues to the public and into public libraries and elements like this. So this is something we are working on now. The media, it's always very good to have good relationships with the media, but the media doesn't want to hear good news. You're sitting with this kind of a complex relationship, you know, and I found out that one way that they actually don't, they never publish good things, but if you try and explain to them, they just don't publish it. So in certain cases, when I was educating journalists about those endocrine disruptive agents, you know, basically, you know, we send them all the possible information, they simply stopped. Because, you know, they realize, you know, that where they stand in a way, you know. And so it's always very good to really educate the media. Getting the media to actually write good things, from time to time we succeed. And we always invite them, and what we did succeed in the past and we are doing is that we get 50-50 to go to a project site. We get, when there is good news, we take them with. So we are trying to actually get them to come to special things, and sometimes we even get, you know what I mean, I remember when there was visa, the Water Institute of South Africa, when it was the big conference, we got the media in, we talked about water, they interview you, I think they interview myself, it was in the news. So we're trying very hard to actually put it in the news, it's constant work. You know, and we will continue and do it because ignoring the media is not good. And at the same time, you know, only letting, one thing that we do not do is we never rush and say things are wrong. You know, you will get, you know, tomorrow 20 journalists that will come and want to listen about the water crisis. Because there is no water crisis, you know, but it's very interesting for them. It's very important that there will be a water crisis because it is bad news in a way. Okay. Trying to figure out what is next. The auditor, you want to know what happened. It was very simple. What happened was that we are accumulating a hell of a lot of debt that were not debt, because we had a very interesting financial policy that said that if we didn't get an audited statement, that means that they owe us the money. So it created a very major task, and the auditor general said it should not be part of your finance. So we asked permission from the board, and the board approved that we can change the rule and that it's not considered to be part of our finance. And the board was very satisfied with the deliverable system as a control from point of you only pay when you get a deliverable back. So we have changed the rule, and we have changed the financial statement, and how that's how we solve the problem. Thank you.
And the cash and accrual.
The cash and accrual. We have a problem. The Public Finance Management Act tells us to do one thing as for budgeting and one thing as for... We could have budgeted on accrual basis, it would be like will be much easier. But you see, we have to report through the system. Reconciling the system has been my mission since I came there. I can't really reconcile them. But I can actually explain the question, I can explain the accrual, but I can't reconcile them. I try my best. I must say to you, I sat with accounting professor and whatever, no, it's not working. I don't know.
I think it was answered.
You want to know more about male-female ratios?
Yeah, the gender breakdown.
Gender breakdown. We are starting to collect that information now. It's a massive exercise to get information out of universities. So we do not know. Also, it's very much different field. In the field that our chairperson comes from, lots of females. You know, all the water ecology, water immunology, the water microbiology, many females. Engineering, mostly men. That's the natural cut, you know. Economists, you know, you will get also resource economists, mostly men. But the actual, you know, data, as for how many students are male and female, I do not know. I must also tell you that we have a lot of foreign students in our university, so we are actually serving Africa very well in our universities too. And many of our new hydrologists are coming from Africa, not from South Africa.
Okay.
Usually, in the department, we have a problem of shortage of fields and all of those things. And you also on one of your slides mentioned it. Oh, I just want to know what is. Could you maybe tell us that amongst the students, have you helped the department to address most of the scarce skills coming from the students that you have? What is the commission's contribution in regard to capacity building and skills development?
I cannot say that I have the numbers, that, you know, how many people that actually have been trained are now serving in the department. I do not have it. So I cannot tell you that. You know, I think we'll try and find that information. It wouldn't be easy. But we can try and find the information. But what I can say is that we try, you know, because internship in draft wasn't very much, you know, it's new, you know, with the academy now and all those activities. So as the academy is developing, we are working very closely with them.
Okay. In closing, I'm expecting you. Is there a last question?
Yeah. Yeah, my last question is actually with regard to the research, especially with regard to the underground water. Because mostly in the rural areas, there is this question of the problem of water scarcity. Have you tried to get some information with regard to the underground water and how in those areas where there are no big rivers, where people can extract water from the ground, if you have done some research with regard to that? And also, I need also to find out, because I think my other question with regard to the problem that in the Eastern Cape was not adequately addressed with regard to the quality of water and to the problems that actually made those the children to die. And it was actually said that it was because of the water, and the Department of Health couldn't even give us the right answer with regard to that. So I just want to find out whether are you also doing all those other research so that to give the Department of Water and Forestry that advantage of knowing exactly what can be done so that this process could help. Thank you.
We do. There are years of research and many reports on groundwater. There have been surveys on groundwater. There have been, various, studies on, how to utilize, how to integrate water, groundwater into the overall water resource management. There were even studies on recharging of groundwater aquifer down in the country. We have a vast knowledge. We're still looking at groundwater from point of pollution, from point of water quality. Sometimes there are nitrate problems that actually can create, blue kids, due to anemia. And we are looking at treatment. We're looking at groundwater also from point of pumping and cost. And there is a vast knowledge base in the ground field, and research is still carrying out. A lot of research has been done on the groundwater here in the Cape area, Table Mountain aquifer, which is a very interesting aquifer. And I think the knowledge is available, for free to everybody. And we worked very closely with the department throughout the years with the ground people and the water resource planning, as the DG spoke about, So that knowledge is available and been used by DWAF. The water quality. We have guidelines for water quality. We have studies that actually provide guidelines of how to deal with water with disease, water transmitted or sanitation related disease. There are a lot of studies on epidemics. There are studies that actually link health and water it's all available. Implementation is all not always right, and sometimes things happen, due to different reasons. We are not policing that. We also not testing water quality on a routine basis. We provide the tools to do that. But we will, in a way, support with providing the knowledge, in a way, and we will provide support to actually do investigations where required. But if you ask me if those things can be prevented, I will say the knowledge is there. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much again to the Water Research Commission led by Dr. Kaffer. In thanking you, maybe just to pick up on the point of the media, may I suggest that maybe I've learned that through, I serve on the board of Love Life, mm-hmm. and I've learned that what they've done is that they, same problem, they will rather publish things that is negative other than what the function of it. But one of the things that we have been able to overcome there is, and that I maybe want to suggest, is we have a regular session with editors. So they go up there and get history up there. And have a regular session with them to share information with them, and there's a partnership now in it's your role too to do something about HIV and AIDS through the form of media. I think that it would be wise if
Thank
the Water Research Commission do something like that in having a relationship with the editors to make them a partnership in provision of water in all its different, whether it's scarcity, whether it's to make sure that they can send a message of asking people to save water and all the other different things. So that's the one that
thank you. We'll follow. Yes, thank you.
The second suggestion is what you have raised. I think that with draft, you should ask assistance from Treasury in the issue that you have raised on cash and accrual. That's the function that seducing Treasury must assist you with it, because you also have to comply with the Public Finance Management Act in this regard. So that's the other suggestion. But again, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Honourable Member, stepping off the Water Service Commission and go to the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, CCTA, and I'll get to you there. As you come in to sit here, I thought I would show everyone this. I thought that this was quite a cute idea that the Bloomwater has, picking up from the committee, you know, this obsession that we have about adopting a river and adopting. And they've come up with a very creative idea, which I think that the Water Service Commission should maybe also have into on adoption. If you get a doll like this, you sign a certificate to say that you don't only adopt it, but you adopt, it's got a name, this fellow, Pop something, Toadie. His name is Toadie, and you must adopt Toadie, and your commitment to adopt Toadie is a commitment towards making sure that we have clean drinking water and that we save water in South Africa. So I think that a similar thing for the Water Research Commission in dissemination of knowledge in a very simple form, I think, should be very nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe Bloomwater is there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, DDG from Water Affairs, other members from the Department of Water Affairs, our colleagues from the Water Research Commission. For TCA, it's a privilege to be here today and an honour to have the opportunity to present our annual report. If I may, Chair, just apologise for our Chairperson, who would have loved to be here today, Dr. Snowy Korta. She joined TCA in February this year, but we have our Deputy Chairman, Yana, here today, and also our CFO, Oliman Aziz. Thank you. My name is John Clausen. I'm the acting CEO. Our agenda for this morning is just to give a bit of a background to TCA. I will be very brief. I assume that most members know about TCA, so I won't spend too much time on that. I would like to give an overview of our projects during the year, financial highlights, talk a bit about our going concern concept, which will explain any shortages that we may have in our financial statements, talk a little bit about our governance, sustainability report, and also about the National Water Resources Infrastructure Agency, DCA's role in that, and then if there are any questions and answers, will follow. Just by introduction, TCA has actually had a very good year in terms of our progress on our mandate, our projects that we've implemented. We've achieved a lot of progress, which I'll share with you. In terms of our financial statements, we have received the unqualified audit report. We've also been in a position to raise sufficient funding on all our projects to be able to meet our commitments. And we've also been successful in growing our business, so we're looking forward to a very prosperous future for this game. Just by way of background, our vision and mission, that is also in our financial statements, I don't want to spend too much time on that, but our mission really is to provide a cost-effective service to the Department of Water Affairs in rolling out bulk stormwater infrastructure. TCA is an organisation. You can see on the left-hand side there, TCA is really a parastatal organisation, special purpose vehicle with a mandate to fund and implement projects on behalf of the Department of Water Affairs. We report by the Minister of Water Affairs to Parliament. and we have oversight by the Department of Food Safety. What do we do? We do project implementation, we do project funding, and we do tariff setting, we do debt management, and we provide financial advising services. So if the Water Resources Commission wants us to try and assist them with the crew and the cash flow, then I'm sure Lima, our team, will be able to do it.
Thank you all.
Our footprint in South Africa, you can see that we are involved across South Africa, starting from the Western Cape, where we recently completed the Zone 40 project, going right to Polokwane in the Bapa, where we're involved in the fully funded project. The next slide talks about TCA multi-project environment. It's a bit of a busy slide, but it does give really a picture of TCA's business. I'll show with the mouse here. You can see that in terms of the implementation and funding mandate that we have received from the Gulf of Water Trade, we are involved in the Central Highlands Water Project, the Berg Water Project, the Fresa Project, and also the Moyamgeni Transfer Scheme 2, which is a new project in KwaZulu-Natal. The advisory services that we currently engage with is really on new mandates and new projects that will be forthcoming. And here we are involved on the Qualicons project, which since our end of the financial year, we've actually received a mandate also to come and implement the certain components of that. The Kumasi project, which is a project that further pipeline for Eskom that we're busy with. We also received, in fact, in October, a mandate to fund and implement that. And then we're also involved in the Crocodile Makolo project, which is a further very strategic project for providing water for Sasol, and in the first instance, in fact, for Eskom, to alleviate the country's crisis in terms of power generation. On the Lesotho Islands Water Project, that project is, phase one of that project has been completed some time ago, and everybody knows that we are receiving water from the city. What we're currently doing there is doing the fund management, so we're responsible for all the debt management of all the loans raised by South Africa for the funding of the project. And we're also responsible for the operation and maintenance of that component of the project, which is situated on the South African side. Our debt book currency is just below 20 billion, to give you an idea of the size of the borrowings. And the repayment period of that debt is structured to be fully repaid by 2025. The Berg Water Project, we did the implementation there, the funding there, and the risk management. And we completed the Berg Water Project towards the end of this financial year. Currently, the outstanding borrowings on that project is 1.1 billion. And again, that project also the cost will be amortized over about a 25-year period, and the debt should be fully repaid by 2028. The Fresa project, providing water for Sasol and Eskom in the Secunda area, taking water from the Baal Dam for their use. That project is not completed as yet. But we've achieved a lot of progress during the current year. I'll show some later slides. I've got some pictures that will show you the status of the project. Then the Moyamgeni, as I said, that's a new project that started. We haven't started with the construction. We're busy with the planning stages. And we believe that the... I've got a slide that I can actually show you exactly what our program is on that. Just in terms of the role that TCA play and the reason for our existence, I think there was a question asked earlier this morning. I think TCA plays a very significant role in government's agenda for infrastructure development. What is also very important for TCA was a policy decision that was taken around 1997, which stated that where there's a commercially viable project, TCA should be raising funding, and it should, in fact, be then funded on balance sheet. Now, what that means is that it obviously frees up other cash or government revenue for spending on social activities. The problem of voter fraud is also driving from federating policies, you know, policy and regulation from implementation, and I think this is also where the idea of the agency came in. So that is another external factor that impacts on PCA. Just in terms of PCA's business model, I like to refer to this really as a one-stop shop for government. If the Department of Water Affairs identifies a project, they can come to the DCA. We will create the institutional arrangements for that project in our project preparatory phase. We will then proceed to the implementation of that project, also the funding of that project, and then we will be taking the responsibility to also manage the debt of the project. Until the project is fully repaid, then we will hand back the assets to the Department of Water Affairs. What we don't do as a rule currently is to operate and maintain these assets. So it really makes sense to assign that responsibility back to the Department of Water Affairs, because usually if we implement the project, it's part of a bigger system, and the department is responsible for the operation and maintenance of that system, so this will just be a further component. This slide just tries to illustrate how we structure the project. Now, there are really four legs to that. The first side here is to tie in the water users so that we can secure our income stream. On the right-hand side here, what you do is we transfer risk to the private sector. We follow the policy of assigning risk to the party be suited to actually manage that risk. So in terms of the physical design of our project, we will enter into contracts with consultants that are capable and competent to do that activity. And once construction, you know, is required, we will again go on tender and we will appoint external commercial contractors that are best qualified to undertake that construction work. So DCA will be really fulfilling a project management role and making sure that the consultants and contractors appointed by ourselves are delivering on the project mandate as per our specification. For us to raise funding, what is important is to structure the project such that we get a credit rating. So once we've achieved the credit rating, and fortunately TCA on both our current mandate achieved AA+ credit rating, which is an excellent credit rating. This allows us to raise cost-effective funding. So we will structure the project such, put it to a rating agency, an independent rating agency. They will give us a credit rating, and we will use that credit rating to approach the bank to provide us the funding for the project. We also obtain land ownership. So we are empowered by the minister to expropriate land. So the land and the assets become DCA's assets until such time as we fully repay the debt, and then we will be adding the assets back to the Department of Water Affairs. As shown here, the Department of Water Affairs currently do the operation and maintenance. As far as our advisory services are concerned, at this point in time, there are two key advisory services. One was on the Williphant River Water Resource Development Project. Now, this is a project in Limpopo and from Longa provinces, and it is providing water for mining development, the platinum mines in that area. But it's also got a very big social component. 50% of the water will be allocated for social use, and it will be bringing water to people that currently have less than the minimum required water per individual. TCA is currently busy with the institutional and funding arrangements. We're negotiating off-take agreements for the mines, and we're also in the process of putting our implementation agreement in place in the Department of Water Affairs. We have, in fact, been, since the end of the financial year, received a mandate for the funding and implementation of that project. The budget is about $6.5 billion. And the implementation is scheduled to continue until around about 2015. Just to perhaps deal with the question. working together with the Department of Water Affairs in the implementation of this project. Now, the Department of Water Affairs is currently busy with the construction of the river dam. So CCA is not really involved at this point in time with the construction of the dam. The department is doing that internally. They've got a construction unit, and they've also done the designs internally. That part of the project is currently funded by government through National Treasury, and TCA will be responsible for the distribution system. So once the dam is in place, there need to be pipelines to take the water to the various mines and also to the community. And that part of the project, the Department of Water Affairs mandated us to fund and implement. But as far as the dam is concerned, the money that National Treasury is putting in, DCA is also going to raise finance, you know, for that component once we get off-take agreement. So that money will really then be available to DCA for part funding of the other projects. But National Treasury is going to contribute to the social part of the project. So if there are any further questions, perhaps we can talk about that later. The Kumasi project is a project that everybody knows that Eskom is looking for a lot of expansions, and this is impacting on TCA. We're actually becoming a strategic partner to Eskom. They can't generate power unless they've got water, and this is the role TCA is playing as defined by the Department of Water Affairs. And this is another project that we've been actually mandated. I'm talking about September. We've received the mandate in October. For the funding implementation of a pipeline that will take water to Eskom Zuba Power Station, which is in the Bidbank area. Just an overview on our existing projects that mostly we were dedicated to working on during the past financial year. Highlights on the Burnwater project. I must say that I think the Burnwater project is most probably TCA's flagship project. We're very proud of that project. It's the first project that was assigned to us other than the Tutu Highlands Water project. We completed this project in time, on budget, which is actually a rare occasion. You know, normally these kind of projects overrun their budget. We are proud that we, in fact, 300 million rand below original estimates that we received from the Department of Water Affairs. We also raised very cost-effective funding through our AA+ credit rating. We created more than 1,000 jobs for the local community, peaking in a year. That's a figure for a year. We set specific BEE targets for procurement by our contractors, and they exceeded those targets that we set. We've achieved a 99% compliance level with the environmental requirements, and also a project or component that we're very proud of is we had to construct 80 houses to house the construction staff, and those houses will be handed over to the local community, Stellenbosch. We will then sell the houses to the local community at affordable prices. Now the proceeds of that will then be put in a trust fund, and that trust fund will then be used for further housing development. And again, we sell, so it is like a revolving fund that we have created. We also received two merit awards for engineering and environmental. Just to show you a few pictures on the Burnwater project, the top one there, you can see what the dam basin looked like before we started, or at the time that we started. And here you can see the dam completed with already some water in. I think if you now take a drive towards Frankfurt, you'll see that the dam is overflowing. So it looks more impressive than the, I think it's about 40% full. It's now more than 100% full. Now, this is the intake structure which will allow water to be drawn from the dam. What is significant here is that this inlet structure was specifically designed taking the health of the river into account. We can release sufficient water in here to simulate floods. The maximum flood that we can release is 200 cubic meters of water per second. I'll show you just now what it looks like. And we can release, the planning for the dam is such that we release up to 40% of the natural or the annual inflow into this dam will be released for environmental purposes. Now, 40% is most probably the highest release from any dam or other dam in South Africa. Now, we tested the radial gate, which allows that water to be released, and this is basically what it looks like. I must say it's quite an experience to stand next to that stream of water. It's really quite impressive. Further downstream from the dam, we have what we call the supplement scheme. Now, what that scheme does is a diversion structure within the river, which takes the water into this, this is the diversion structure. It takes the water into this balancing dam, and from there we actually, through that pump station, we pump it back into the dam for storage. Now, the rationale for this is that there is actually the Dwars River flows into the Berg River below the dam wall. So in order to also have the benefit of that yield, the supplement scheme is moving on to the FRESA project. Now, the FRESA project is basically a pipeline and a pumping station, pumping water from the Vaal Dam to be used by Sasol and Eskom near Kumba. We're not fully completed with this project as yet, but we have achieved substantial completion. The pipeline of 21 kilometers has been completed. The island pump station, which pumps the water up, has also been successfully completed. We peaked at 1,300 jobs for the local community. We're also on schedule for achieving our BEE target set for the contractors. Slightly less compliance in terms of environmental requirements, but still really good 91. And we're on schedule to start water delivery by December this year. Currently, the project is in commissioning phase, and I believe the pipe, the pumps have all been tested, and the first water is actually being delivered to the 121 kilometer pipeline. We had a slight overrun on our original budget of about 8%. But we expect to be completed within the revised approved budget of 2.7 million. That just gives you an idea of the size of the pipe. It's a 1.9 meter diameter pipe. And you can see there's some people there, so you can kind of get the feel for how big this pipeline is. I've spoken about the Isla pump station. There you can see the outside of the pump station, and then these are the pumps that will be pumping the water through the pipeline. Now, some of the, you know, most of a project like this is underground, so we do have a few structures above ground. That is the diversion structure at Knoppiesfontein, where the water that goes to Sasol and Eskom will be separated. That's the only portion of the pipeline that's above ground, which goes over the river crossing. That's what we call the surge tank that's along the pipeline route to prevent the pipeline from damaging if one of the pumps trips. And then finally, part of the delay on this project was caused by unpredicted geological conditions at the permanent extraction work. Now, that picture at the top there shows the permanent extraction work. At the background there is the Vaal Dam. So here we will be constructing an intake structure which will allow the water from the dam to flow into the intake structure, and from there it will be pumped to the island pump station, and from there it will be pumped to Secunda. Now, in order to mitigate against the time delay, what we decided on was to put a sensory pump station in. So this sensory pump station will allow us to really receive water from the project by December. Okay, the Moyen Daily Transfer Scheme, that's our new project. We received the mandate on the 27th of November. Currently, we have completed the due diligence process to make sure that the budget and the technical specifications that we receive from the Department of Water Affairs are, sufficiently accurate for us to do our detailed planning. We are going to start our planning to start construction in 2015 with water delivery towards 2012, and the estimated cost of this project currently is about $1.7 billion. Just to give you an idea of where this project is, here you can see it's the Mitmar Dam. The people that have driven in the Peter Maritzburg area, that's currently the dam that you can see from the roadside, and this project will be supplementing that system, which is providing water to the Durban area, the industrial heartland of the KwaZulu-Natal area. So you can see it's basically part of the system, so it's a further addition. The phase one of the Moyen scheme was a MIA, the Moyen's MIA, that is currently in operation. Now, this system is actually under stress, so this project is an emergency project. It should have been implemented a couple of years ago, but there was some delays in terms of getting the final approval for the project to proceed. So currently, this water system is not has not the reliability that is set by the Department of Water Affairs for municipal area. Now, just another picture of showing where the project will fit in. There's again the what we call currently called the Kingrove Dam, which is close to the Beta, and the water will be put into the river system that flows to the Mitmar Dam. Okay, moving over to the financial highlights. I think some of these things have been said, but just to point out, you can see there's been an increase in our operating surplus. Now, that's really due to income from the Sugar Highlands Water Project. I think TCA's business is slightly different. We first construct the project, and then once we start delivering water, normally we start showing the income. But what is important to understand is that we ring fence our project. So each project should be sustainable in its own right. And although I'm also a financial person, you know, the financial result of TCA is maybe less meaningful than the physical progress on the ground in terms of the project. But I can give the assurance, and we'll talk about it a bit later, that our business is sustainable and our income streams are secured in order to ensure that we will repay all the debt. Just on our balance sheet, the total assets for the year was just below 20 billion, and it increased from the previous year due to the construction. Our assets are all funded through liabilities, and as I said earlier, we were in a position to secure liabilities to meet all our capital expenditure. In terms of our funding requirement over the year, that's just a picture of our additional funding that we will have to raise for our existing mandate. What this does not include is our new mandate, and we will only be reflecting that in our annual financial statements once we've secured the borrowing. The going concern concept, I don't want to go through all the details, but as I said before, we've got guaranteed income streams for all our projects, so although we may be showing a surplus or a shortfall in a particular year, our income streams are structured to amortize the cost of the project over a predefined period. And if we find that there's less water or that the cost of the project has gone up or interest rates have increased or for whatever reason, then we have a mechanism make an adjustment to the tariff, and that will ensure that we will always have sufficient funding to meet our liabilities. So TCA is definitely a going concern if somebody might have a concern about. governance, the speech to the child, Minister Walker says, sit here in our board. These are all our subcommittees. We've got an EXCO, and we've got these management committees that report into EXCO. From TCA's point of view, we are satisfied that we apply best practice in terms of our governance practices, and that we meet the guidelines of the choose board. In terms of corporate governance, we had a few leadership changes during the course of this year. Our former CEO has resigned from the end of January this year. We also had an unfortunate death of our former chairman, and also lost one of our board directors. Now, I can just say that a change in governance structure has been managed well, and we now have a new chairman, as I said, since February. We also have new board members appointed, and we're currently in the process of filling the vacancy in terms of the substantive position of chief executive. Our sustainability for TCA is very important. The way that we implement our projects needs to be in a sustainable manner. We look at an internal environment in terms of our own human capital, and we apply practices to ensure that we've got sufficiently motivated staff with the right capability to exercise, to execute our mandate. From an external point of view, we look at the cost effectiveness of our projects. From the environmental point of view, we comply with all the environmental requirements. And then also from a social responsibility point of view, we try to maximize the positive impact of our projects on the local community. In terms of job creation, we've got some statistics in your slides on achieving that. As I said before, we've actually exceeded all the targets that we set ourselves in the beginning of the project. Social empowerment in terms of training. We've undertaken a lot of training within the project areas. We've also placed relations and contractors who are actually best positioned to train people from the local community to do that in terms of their work activities. In terms of social empowerment, I previously mentioned the procurement from BE and BEE companies within the project areas. We set certain targets for our contractors, and they succeeded those as well, so we're very satisfied with the success of our strategy. In terms of procurement from our organisational level, we have of our total procurement of 923 million, 875 million was spent on BEE companies. I must point out that this is on the narrow basis, and we're in the process of converting to the full base. Our EE statistic for the organisation, TCA, is also doing very well in that regard. Our total backstop component at that point in time is 64%. In management positions, backstop represents 47%. And then black women in management positions also 29%. I think from those who know TCA, we're very gender correct, and I think about 60%. Of our total staff complement is women. Just on the agency, TCA is working closely together with the Department of Water Affairs in preparing ourselves for the agency. We are aware that the bill was presented to Parliament and has been referred back. We will be taking guidance from the Department of Water Affairs in terms of how we progress this matter. But currently, there are three structures in which we participate. The one is the Ministerial Advisory Committee, where the chairman of TCA, the CEO, and one board member are members of that committee. We've got a steering committee with senior representatives from the Department of Water, and then we've also established work streams to look at the different disciplines to make sure that Water Affairs and TCA are working towards degrading yourself in this measure. Say that in your part of the essay, thank you.
Thank you very much for a very comprehensive report given to us and for members of the
team. Thank you, Chairperson. DCTA always gives a good presentation and they do a good job, actually. But I still have questions. I just want to know, you are project implementation, right? I want to find out whether you just waiting on the work or whether you're also looking at the projects that you could propose to work that needs research into or that you believe or to be given attention to. Secondly, in relation to your credit rating, right? Now, you also implement particular project, you look at finding funds, foreign funding, all right? If you do, then I was just wondering how the country's credit rating would affect your ability, the type of loans that you would be able to get overseas, if indeed you also attempt to find funds overseas.
If I may respond to those two questions. The first one on the project implementation side, the Department of Water Affairs is doing the national planning for resource development. So TCTA does not really play an active role in that process. What we try to do from our side is to get involved as early as possible in the feasibility study of a project. But the responsibility and accountability for the resource planning, the long-term resource planning, that lies with the Department of Water Affairs, and they're actually doing a very good job in that. If you look at the Lesotho Islands Water Project and how long before you actually get the benefit of a scheme, you have to initiate that project. We're currently busy with phase two planning for the phase two for the Lesotho Islands Water Project. To meet further growing water demands in the Gauteng area.
I'll follow up.
Follow-up question, that's fine.
Okay.
In terms of the credit rating, because we don't receive foreign income, we don't have a natural hedge against the currency exposure on foreign loans. So it is in fact our preference not to raise foreign loans, and where we do raise foreign loans, we upfront convert that into rand. So currently, for example, on both the Bergwater project and Treasure project, we use EIB funding, and the EIB funding has been converted into rand, so we don't have any foreign exchange risk. And the credit rating for that foreign funding is actually EIB's credit rating. And that is why the EIB funding is actually cheaper, European Investment Bank. So their funding is actually cheaper than what we can raise locally. So, but the government's credit rating clearly impacts on the AA+. We cannot get a higher rating than government.
we can only get a low rating. So the impact, if government rating drops, the CCA will also drop. So that's the relationship between the two.
It's a negative relationship.
Yeah. On the project, right? You're aware of it. I mean, you're working closely with the department. So you would be aware of the department's long term planning in terms of project dam building program, for instance.
Yeah.
I think I am actually thinking of, I think it's the 20-year program,
20,
right? So we have an idea. All of us have an idea of how many dams we are looking at possibly building, over a period of 20 years. So would you prepare yourself? Do you have an idea as to which one of those various projects will probably be first in line in terms of order of priority? And if you are, would you prepare yourself to implement these various projects?
Chief, we actually have two mandates usually from the Department of Industry. The first mandate we get is to assist them with the institutional arrangements of a project. So during the feasibility, towards the end of the feasibility study, Water Affairs already need to know whether this is a bankable project or is this a project that has to be funded by National Treasury. Now, if it is a bankable project, CCA automatically knows that this is something that's likely to come to us, because other than the Department of Water Affairs, we've got we can raise money, whereas Water Affairs can only go to National Treasury. So that's the first indication that we get. And then secondly, in terms of preparedness, we know reasonably well in advance when a project is coming our way because of that early involvement. So we can then make sure that we've got the resources in place. So when that mandate eventually comes, we can respond to that.
Okay. The one thing that concerns me, because CCTA, you're really one of the things you rely on quite a bit is your financial structure. The financial structure is very much closely linked to your operations, obviously. Now, a good lesson, a good case study was shown with the 2010 rollout program around the country. And if you look at the projections that they have, the money that they set aside, and in some instances where close to completion, what they are actually saying, to what extent, how do the CCPA affected, or to what extent are you affected by the current volatility that there are in the world? What mechanisms are you building into to cushion yourself against volatility? I don't think the volatility is going to go away tomorrow. We seem to be at a lower peak in the capitalist system of peaks and lows. And
confidence.
And seems to be going in one of those low times, peak times in the world. Notwithstanding whatever the minister said about the weathering storm and all of this, and macroeconomic policies are in place. But the truth is infrastructure are breached by these things.
Yeah.
Any one of us, to try and fix something at home, just go and buy paint, and you'll see how much you paid a year ago, and going to paint. Just go and buy a packet of nails. Those very simple things. So I'm very lucky now, because really you work with very high volume of cash and infrastructure that requires very many expenses. We'd like to know that. We're asking this because when the water boards appeared before us, we were really not convinced with some of the figures that they gave us. And the other day, they were showing pages and then see the other pages that are being shown, which shows a decline more than profits and stuff like that. So I think it will help because customers is grappling with a single challenge. Are we moving in the right direction, and to what extent are we being this volatility that we're having at the moment surely it must have an impact on tariff and future tariff projections?
I think that's a very, very good question and also very relevant to where we are currently. Look, I think the bad news is that the end user pays for cost of escalation. The structuring of the projects currently is that TCA will try and minimize the cost of the project, but then the tariff structure will be such to amortize the actual cost of that project over the 20-year time. So the question, the fact of the matter is that the end user does capture this. There's no other source than the end user. So the question then for me is how do we manage that? Now, there are mechanisms in terms of tariff setting to smooth tariffs and to follow a conservative approach so that the end user is not presented with a sudden increase in the cost of water. So there are mechanisms on how to do that. You could, for example, increase the amortization period. You could start early with charging a levy on existing water use and use that then to partly fund the capital cost, because the compounding effect of interest is quite critical. Now, if we look at City of Cape Town, for example, I showed there that the outstanding debt at the end of the project was 1.1 billion. Now, the capital cost of that project was 1.5 billion. So it shows that the City of Cape Town followed a very conservative route, so they didn't want escalation of cost and the capitalization of interest. So there are these kind of strategic mechanisms that you can do to upfront agree a strategy with the off-taker, our client at the end of the day, and how to smooth that tariff. And that is what we're doing, and TCA has got a lot of expertise in that field. In terms of the cost, there are really two cost components. One is the cost of finance, and the other one is the cost of capital of the actual construction work. Now, the funding cost in this volatile market that we are, obviously there's a big risk, because if you talk to any banker, then they tell you that the funding is becoming scarce, and if it becomes scarce, it's becoming more expensive. So the project is at risk for such negative impact. But what we've done from our side is we've followed a very conservative policy in terms of how much money we take on fixed interest rate terms. So we've got a 70-30 ratio. So we aim to have at least 70% of our funding on fixed terms. So then we at least eliminate the interest volatility on that. But the other 30% obviously is exposed to increases in interest rates. From the cost side, what we do from our side is we will do a proper due diligence exercise upfront so that we at least establish a really sound baseline. And then we will add contingencies to that, which is intended to meet our projections of future escalation in cost, but also unforeseen activities. Because a major construction contract has got so many uncertainties that you need to have quite a substantial contingency upfront to make sure that all unforeseen expenditures will be covered in that contingency. But where there's a major change in projection in terms of cost escalation, then you will find that maybe you have to reassess the budget halfway during the contract or the project. But from our side, we try to be very conservative up front, that we don't go back to the project partners and say that, look, last year we said this much, this year it's 20% more. So we try and and build that upfront in our contingency so that the outlook is achieved in school.
Okay. I think that's a very good answer that you have. The honourable members, I'd like you to copy that answer and to purchase any future purchases of cars or houses.
I buy the lottery from now.
There is certainty in the entire equation if you go that right. No, thank you very much to CCTA also for your report.
We need to, my daughter's having a matric farewell evening, so I'm going to be in serious trouble if I'm not in time, so if you allow me, I'll
I hope you're not her partner.
No. But I have to see what she looks like in this very expensive dress that I had to pay for.
No, don't worry. The big funds are beginning now.
El de cómo se viene el How do you make a miracle? How going to get the weekend? What can we do?
Hello.
Oh, my God. I'm not going to get the weekend. I'm going to get the weekend. No problem.
Yeah, I remember that.
Talking about what has not worked in our view, which is basically what the organizations were also highlighting on Wednesday. We believe that our regulation to support the implementation of the Act has not been very much integrated. As a result, the water allocation reform program is lagging behind, and in that way, we are viewed to be failing to bring about issues of equity and redress. The establishment of water management institutions has also been delayed, and that is due to a number of things, including uncertainty
study around the future of staff who may be working for the department having to be transferred to the institution. The roles and responsibilities around the management of assets by water management institutions have also been a big challenge, and in some cases functions have not been fully delegated because of that challenge. The capacity of the department is also very much in question because we lack skilled people, we have vacancies, and we couldn't be able to do some of the things that we had wanted to do as per the National Water Act. Licensing. We acknowledge that there is a problem with licensing, and on Wednesday we indicated that there are many reasons to that, but of course Dwarf has its own problems in terms of capacity, but there are other problems that are usually beyond our control. The importance of water user association is also something that we are looking at, given the fact that you still have resistance out there. The irrigation boards do not want to transform, and as such, it is not easy to have a water user association that is fully representative and at the same time addressing the issue on the ground. We also have problems, some of them were highlighted by the group that reported on Wednesday, but we also have most pressing problems as well as DWAF. And the one case that one can talk about is the Vaal River system, whereby there is so much unlawful water use, and it is estimated that the amount of water that we are losing about the yield of Mohale Dam per year. Let me quickly say it is not the 240 million cubic meters as reported on Wednesday, but it's quite a lot, over 150 million cubic meters. And that is a lot of water because all it suggests that somebody has stolen a dam. So the Mohale Dam has been stolen. And it is not an easy thing to think about. We don't have capacity, particularly on the ground, to address those things. The enforcement aspect of the Act is quite a challenge. We do have many other challenges, such as the water quality and lifestyle. Water quality problems resulting from the activities of municipalities. And some municipalities do not even report on the type of water that they give to the community. And being in charge and being the responsible ministry, we get worried because one person dying because of any water problem is one person too much, and that's not what we want to see in this country. Then, our infrastructure is also quite old. Most of that infrastructure was built in the 70s, and it was not well maintained. But again, we acknowledge that it is quite expensive to maintain the infrastructure. However, at the same time, it is better to maintain than to let it go, because if you have to replace, it becomes even more expensive. Then, given these pressing challenges that I've highlighted and those that were highlighted by the organizations that the committee had invited on Wednesday, as a department, we have come up with what we call Water for Growth and Development. It is a very exciting concept, and we're putting so much energy into it. is one way in which we are saying we want to respond to the challenges and at the same time to bring about economic growth. This was very much informed by ACDISA and other programs before ACDISA, where we say for South Africa to grow and to attain a 6% growth, we need to have more water. And we are also equally aware that it is not just the economic growth that we need to focus on, but we also need to look at attaining and exceeding the Millennium Development Goals, whereby we reduce the number of poor people in this country. And given those challenges and the fact that some of the water is either of poor quality or used without actually us accounting for, we think we had a challenge. And we also acknowledge the fact that most of our river catchments have been developed. The opportunities for further infrastructure development are few and far apart, and if we do develop resources, we have to transport that water for long distances, which makes water a bit costly. And we are also equally aware that some of the economic activities that we aspire to see in this country bring about negative impact on the water quality. So you have to balance everything that you are doing. However, we believe that South Africa has enough water and we can make even more water available to our demands, both economic development demands as well as social development. For us to achieve that, we need to think early and start acting now, because it all requires time. I think it was CCPA that indicated that if you start planning now, you must be looking at getting the first drop of water 6-10 years from today. You cannot plan now and have water next year, not unless the type of infrastructure that you want to put up is not of size and magnitude. The maps that we have on the wall indicate the scenario of water demand, water supply. If you look carefully at that map, the red color shows the areas where the demand exceeds the supply. And Gauteng is on top there.
That's also the one that you showed, Vienna. But you can think about it. Honorable members, there you are.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I really just have one question, and that is, what is the representation that we have in front of us, close out of the discussion yesterday that we started. Now, you indicate in the beginning what under the heading, what did not work, alright? Now, I am just wanted to ask from you, that the things that you identified that didn't work to implement the National Water Act in the way you should have. I'm thinking that you're looking at rectifying the shortcomings. Now, if you need to do that, then are you of the opinion that many of the... I'm thinking that you already have ideas as to which areas of the Act needs to be worked on, put it that way. But if you correct all the areas where we went wrong so far, are you of the opinion that it will point out more areas or minimize the areas of the Act that needs attention?
Thank you very much, Mine is actually with regard to
the imbalance or the how the previous government has structured their infrastructure. I heard the DDG saying that most of the infrastructure and the resources are not actually based in the rural areas, but they are only based in the urban areas. But my question to him is that when I was moving around, I discovered that most of the time are not in the urban areas, are in the rural areas. But that water has been taken from those rural areas, from the big rivers through the big dams to the urban areas. Those people who are just staying around those dams are not getting it. And that is not corrected. If I have heard your reply towards correcting the situation there, I don't hear much of the answer saying that they are actually trying to correct those actually the skewed supply of water towards the urban areas. And even in this report, it is also indicating that the people in the rural areas are getting 4% of water, and 23% is given to the people in the urban areas. So I'm asking, how are you correcting that one? If that's going to carry on, then that's where we're going to have a problem. I'm sure last week and this week, we've seen people in the Northwest were marching, protesting, and if you check those people, if you can go around those people, you find victims around them, but they don't get water from them. So water supply is actually cutting them out of the system. And you also indicated that the infrastructure is aging. It was actually done in the 70s and the 80s. But we don't see new things coming to address that, because that infrastructure is old, but it's also transferring water to the urban center and neglecting those people. And what about the new infrastructure? Is it not going to be done so that it could actually take the water to those people? Thank you very much. I'll be happy if you can address that question.
The case study is about systems, where you mentioned that God is very weak in enforcement efforts. That who is supposed to be giving instructions of doing the job, and who is not really doing their work there? But at the same time, also I should have started by really saying I'm very impressed that you were listening. I mean, to have a response like this, it shows that you were paying attention to all that was happening. But the other thing that worries me is this issue of the old infrastructure that is aging. Who is responsible for it? Is it GWAF or municipality? Who is supposed to be looking after that? I know GWAF is responsible for water, but now I want to know this.
Thank you.
in sort of a document that you have put together. I think what is going to be important is how do we move forward? Having heard everyone on Wednesday, I think, and then the response that Dwarf is giving, there's not a lot of meat around the actual areas that you are identifying. I think we were quite interested to find out in the 5 years what thought has gone into it, because remember the department did threaten change in the National Water Act. So when you threatened the country you're going to change the act, we thought then by that time you must have then had some ideas on what is it that you wanted to change. So I think it's going to be, we're quite interested in what your views are on the areas that you want to change in the Act. We are not advocating change for the sake of change. We think it's a good thing to have a review after 10 years and then see what we need to do. On the implementation side of things, I think maybe, Dwarf, you should maybe just be a little bit more honest with us on that one and tell us whether at all, in terms of your financing module in the department, whether it is assisting you. Because you see, Dwarf does rely quite a bit on donor funding on a couple of things. Now, you know, you can own your changes and your projects on the basis of the finance that you yourself put in there. So, for example, if you do a pilot project on what is this thing, Olifant Doorn that you have, or have, I can't remember, here in the Western Cape you rolled out something.
The IWRM,
as an example. Now, I'm not sure to what extent all of that comes out of your budget. But I would imagine that the reason why it's a pilot must be capacity and or, well, a range of different resource problems, both human probably and financial resources. Because you see, when you bring an act or whether you amend the act, one of the things that you've got to do is to learn from the lesson of not putting a financing model in there. Because in most instances, that's what we get wrong when most of the departments come to Parliament. There's an act, there's no finance model in there. The only sentence that is there is that we won't, it doesn't have a big finance impact on the department. Something like that they say. Yeah, and it's a cut and paste sentence that it's not a real one. So, we're quite interested because if you don't implement the Act, there will be more and more calls to change it. And so those changes are going to be called for by the mere fact that there are other problems. So I think if you can assist us there. But I really just wanted to speak to how do we move forward on this one. The disadvantage on our side is that we're going towards an election. There's not a lot of time in Parliament. We're coming back in November again. And that's the end of 2008. And then we return to Parliament again at the beginning of the year to do whatever the program is going to be. We're interested to see this program through. And we're wondering whether we shouldn't... if Parliament agrees that we need that committee to be allowed to have strategic planning sessions, we would be keen, honourable members, I trust you will support us. We would be keen at our sort of strategic planning session that we normally have, that the department brings us step 5 or whatever of what they're doing, not only with that this act but the other two acts that we also reviewed not too long ago. So that what we do is, you know, we take the responsibility both as a portfolio committee and the department been saying to the incoming committee, this is where we are. We think it will be wrong if we allow a situation where the incoming committee is going to be told, look, we are having some thoughts. We've got some plan. We maybe would like to do the following. I think it would be good if you hit the ground running and start off the year, the 5 years, with bringing the legislative changes where you would want to make them. So we would be keen to in the new year see if it is agreed that, you know, our program can interact with you, for the department to give a well thought through one, more than what you've given here now, on these are the areas, so that we start a meaningful conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that doesn't exclude you from doing the other things. We think the best way to interact on legislative changes is where you allow sufficient consultation in a very, very different way. It doesn't take the obligation of Parliament away that you can't talk to us. You can talk to us before you change legislation. But you must, after you have consulted, that doesn't mean we can't have a second bite at it again as a portfolio committee. So honourable members, I think it would be quite crucial.
Mm.
You've raised very grave things in here, I must say. And, well, I'm certainly worried as I'm sitting here now. I must be very honest with you with the issues that you have put here. And I think we should congratulate you for being frank and honest.
Mm.
About very of the many things. The question is, what do we do? What's to be done, said Vladimir Lenin. What's to be done, and how do we change the things? In some instances, not all of it is the WAF that has to do that. It's your partnership with some of the other departments.
Mm.
But let me end there, honourable members, and maybe get a quick response from Dwarf, and then I'm not sure the Aleka where the lunch is going to be. It's in the bad place.
It's
terrible.
Now that the capitalism are in trouble, we're taking out our cash.
On a serious note, on what honourable Arendt has said, you know, honourable members and Dwarf, when you sit with a situation where there is scarcity, choices will have to be made. So, how do you satisfy honourable member Swati? Because he resides in an area where there is no water. You know, it doesn't matter what you say or what slogans you're going to use. There isn't water there. What do you do? Because you owe it to the citizenry of South Africa to implement the Millennium Development Goals. What choices are going to be made? If you look at South Africa's agricultural plan, are you sufficiently engaging with them to say, look, you can't grow wheat in this country? You have the clout, don't look at me because I know you want me to say balls, so I'm not going to say those choices will have to be made. The agriculture sector will have to scream and shout, but if South Africa can't grow wheat anymore, it will have to import wheat from elsewhere, because wheat is one of those things. Are you going to fight with the people in KwaZulu-Natal to tell them that sugar cane is just not... I mean, are you going to be able to make those choices? And if so, when are you going to make them? Because you see, you still owe water to the people in Limpopo. You still owe water to people in Bushbuckridge. You owe water to people not in the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape, you've got different problems. You've got water resources there, but you've got a management problem. In KwaZulu-Natal, you've got water resources, you have a management problem, and in some instances, you've got, in some far-flung areas, you've got drought at the moment. And those droughts are not going to go away. So those are the only belts that you have. It's the east belt of the country where your water resource is. In the northwest, on the Bumaine, you don't have water. You've got a couple of stuff and so on. So I think we are interested to find out in the legislation where it says that, you know, the minister can make these changes so that people can have water, I can't find it. It's that close. I mean, for how long are you going to suck out of that well that is going dry? I'm not trying to paint a gloomy picture, but I'm just not seeing Dwarf saying to the country that there are some stark choices that have to be made, and we are making them come 2010. We are making them come. Because it's election, you see. There's going to be green. There's no water, and don't vote for the ANC because they didn't give you water, and so on. There's no one that will say there's just no water in that well. Not going to be. No, Swati won't do that. He understands it. He mustn't say that to you. He doesn't scream like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for the question. Let me start by this issue. I think some of the challenges that we have as a nation will necessitate that youth assistance. For instance, the constitution of the country has to be reviewed, given our years of government and the way in which we relate to one another. I'm not going to unpack that one because we can sit here the whole day. The other level is what Madam Chair and Honorable Aaron said earlier on. Which areas of the Act are we going to look at? If there is any area within the Act that I would take a closer look personally is Section 25, which talks about water trading. Because as a result of that, and maybe where clarity is not there, you boil down to what Land Affairs has been saying, willing seller, willing buyer. And there's no such in a country like ours where the majority are the needy. People who have water want to trade among themselves. They don't want to give water to those that do not have. And that is the section that I would probably say it needs some strong revision, because if we have to give water to the people that need water, that section needs to be addressed. And I think it also talks to what Honorable Swati was saying. In terms of responding to the question that Honorable Swati asked, most of our infrastructure was a single-purpose infrastructure. Let me make an example of Jozini Dam, which used to be called Pongola Poor. There's a lot of water there. The dam was built for the farmers and only farmers. That's correct, madam. And there, you have people who are 80 kilometers away from the dam. Mm. They are not getting that water. Even people who are 3 kilometers from the dam, they are not getting the water.
The member that is serving this committee, that was his plea, he stayed next to the dam. He's now buried next to the dam. He still doesn't have that water by the time that he was buried, Honorable Mabuyakulu, brother to the MEC there in that. That's where we saw the beautiful dam when we went to his funeral. He's now buried next to the dam. His house still doesn't have water.
Thank you, madam. And what that does is that if you want to link another people to that infrastructure, you get told there's no way. For instance, there at Pongola Poor, when we wanted to negotiate for people in the area to get water, we get told the power that is there is not enough to pump water to those other communities. But now you have a dam. There is power, but power was meant to supply Jozini Town. Now, if you want to take the water to the people, you have to pump. The energy limits you. The power does not allow you to pump. And those are the realities. However, the department is saying now we shouldn't have single purpose dams anymore.
Yes.
All our new dams should have multi-purpose. We should take into account that there are people in the vicinity who need to get water for many other things, not just for drinking. And before we think of taking that water elsewhere, for instance, if we put up a dam in the Umzimbulu catchment, we will have to take into account what is happening in Umzimbulu at the moment before we pump that water to any other part of the country. I think that is the position. To who is responsible for enforcement as well as aging infrastructure? Unfortunately, it is the department, and there are challenges there. Capacity, we are talking about it and very seriously doing so. We are linking up with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. We are learning from their green scorpion so that we could have our blue scorpion. We have started the process whereby we are trying to get our National Water Act as one of the specific acts within NEMA so that we take it back on that. On the infrastructure, there's a bit of a challenge because it is going to be very expensive to maintain and to refurbish. And when you look at your tariff, not for the poor, the poor are getting their water, it won't affect them that much. But when you look at the tariffs and revisiting the tariffs on the value of the asset, then everyone who is getting your water is saying, but your water is going to be very expensive. You are destroying the economy of the country. So now you reach a balance whereby you need to say, what do I do? Do I introduce the new tariff based on the value of the assets that I have? For instance, a dam will cost you 6 billion rand. And if you say, look, the tariff has to talk to that value of the asset, or the value of the dam will be 6 billion rand. And if you say the tariff should actually talk to the value of the asset, they come and say, look, for 10 years that I've been using this water, this is what I've been paying. If you introduce a new tariff, means I'll pay 5 times more. Is it because you are getting me, you are phasing me out or what? You're kicking me out of business or what? You know, you have those questions coming up. But it is an expensive thing, and we would like to see the department actually refurbishing and maintaining the infrastructure that we have. Madam Chair, regarding of there was a question from the honourable member on my left about Madam Peggy, honourable member, about the reserve. The reserve is the first thing that you do whenever you do planning. The reserve is not negotiable. The reserve means the water for the people as well as the water for the environment. In whatever you do, reserve is put aside. You cannot mess up with the reserve because the minute you do that, then everything else is worthless. So when you put up a dam, you take into account that there shall be water for the reserve, then the rest of the water, which is what we call yield, is what is used for other activities. So the reserve is very critical. People will complain when you put up a dam and say we used to have this and that, but at the end of the day it is a calculated thing and a very complicated thing to quantify, but we take it into account at all times. Coming back to your advice, Madam Chair. I think this is where you need to manage institutions and organizations. Some organizations are very unscrupulous, I must say. And that's where you need to say, now I have to play the role of government. You do not destroy someone just because the other person has an agenda, which is a one-person agenda, so to speak. We are responsible for the nation, and the reserve is not negotiable, even if it means some of their activities are compromised.
we cannot actually ignore the river.
Indeed, I think you're too much in the company of Nigel
Adams. Maybe that's the reason why I'm in government. Madam Chair, regarding your guidance in terms of what else we could do, may I request that we take that as a homework and hopefully we will be given an opportunity in the future to update this committee as to what we are doing, and we shall do that. But for now, we thank you, and we've taken note of all that has been said in terms of moving up, in terms of us moving forward.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm sure you would agree that we stop here. The committee of the plate next door. That's where we will have lunch. But for now, honorable members and the guests, thank you very much to all of you. Enjoy the weekend. I don't think I'm the chief of playing this weekend, so I can't wish them all.
Okay, don't play.
I don't know when the rugby is playing, but in the netball, I'm not sure who's playing. But thank you very much to all of you, and all of us that are going on constituency series, don't forget to do oversight on water and forest.
Thanks very much. Thanks a lot. Thank you. It's a lot of work. My work starts now. It's a lot of work. Because I listened to the whole tape. 3 hours of tape. I just
the might.
Yeah, I know nothing about it. That's the thing, you know. I know absolutely nothing about it.
No,
but I've learned a lot. Is there going to be a bite? Can I just help myself to a bite? Maybe? A bit of fruit. I'm on diet, but I'll just have some fruit.
Okay.
Thanks. Are you based in Pretoria? Are you based here? Of course, you're the Yeah. I feel sorry for those people who are based in Cartagena. Yeah.
You look so fine.
Oh, is it a service? It's not a self-service. Oh, I see. Okay, fine.